It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And you can also call us on our local numbers, 247-7282 and 353-4674. And Cecil Harvell is in the studio with us.
Good morning, Ben. Happy holiday.
And happy Memorial Day. I hope you had a good one.
I did, absolutely. Thank you.
We've been talking about foreclosures. I understand you actually had an interesting note on that.
Well, let's continue the discussion today about foreclosures. Wes and myself spoke about those last week. You know, foreclosure is really an area of debtor-creditor law.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it helps to kind of put things in perspective. And the issue of debtor-creditor is really a contractual issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's a promise to pay. Someone is promising to pay another person or another entity a certain amount of money, and in exchange or in consideration of that money, they usually receive goods or services or property,
mm-hmm.
real property, which then, of course, creates a mortgage,
right,
which could potentially create a foreclosure. The question that came in almost immediately after pulling out of the parking lot here on the law firm website was from a gentleman who asked, you know, Cecil, I enjoyed the program on foreclosures and real property foreclosure, but how about does that apply to cars?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is that really it does. I mean, ever so slightly different in that we're dealing with a personal property item such as a vehicle versus a title to land, but absolutely, one can contact the lender relative to the lien that is on the car,
right,
and negotiate just like we do with a deed in lieu of foreclosure, that we give the car back to the creditor in lieu of continuing to make payments or in lieu of them repossessing the car.
Mm-hmm.
And so clearly, yes, the answer to the question is that the concepts apply relative to whether or not a creditor is repossessing a car, whether or not one has fallen behind on their boat payment or their car payment or, of course, their mortgage payment on certain property. The issue that came up last week was, there many times after repossession, many times even after foreclosure and trustee's deed back to the lender,
right,
there is still that amount of money owed on the note.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that deficiency that we spoke about. And, of course, this really applies very much so with personal items.
Yeah, because they depreciate
so
quickly.
Such as a car or a boat.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Furniture,
mm-hmm.
Anything of a personal property nature. The deficiency could potentially be more than the value of the asset that goes up for auction. But again, this is a matter of negotiation. We have had great success in our law firm talking with creditors about mm-hmm. this, even in the personal property context.
Mm.
You can imagine we do a lot of estate work, and sometimes folks die with,
A car payment. Yeah.
I've had a couple of estates recently where someone died unexpectedly, which is always tragic, but with a very significant mm-hmm. car payment or a significant boat lien.
Mm-hmm.
And we again have had to contact the creditor, surrender the car back to the lender, but negotiate that, that we are going to be unable to pay the full deficiency. And can we surrender the car to you voluntarily? We still owe maybe $40,000 on the note after you auctioned
right.
the vehicle. And will you accept half of that? And many times being that we have that money readily available
mm-hmm.
in our trust account or in the estate account, ready to send or wire that very day.
In other words, they don't have to fight over it.
They don't have to fight over it. They accept those
kind of
terms. Accept those terms.
So, again, while we were talking about property last week, in terms of deeded land, this extends really to pretty much any kind of loan. Now, is a loan like on a car, is that a secured loan or is that?
It is. Uh-huh. It is. That's a great question, Ben. We lawyers learn in law school that there are unsecured transactions and there are unsecured creditors, and then there are secured transactions and secured creditors. And let's talk about that a little bit. Our listeners will recognize that an unsecured creditor is such an entity as a credit card company. You know, Best Buy, Lowe's, Home Improvement, any Belk department store, any kind of credit card that we have established with any kind of, you know, goods provider. Okay.
Right.
You know, everywhere we go, it seems like that when you check out, they want to open up a credit card for you at that particular company,
right.
You know.
Right.
My daughter, you know, goes and buys stuff at Gap or Abercrombie or Belk. And of course, the question is, well, you know, Mr. Harvell, don't you want to open up a credit card with our company?
Yeah. And we'll give you so much off.
And we'll give you, you know, a discount off of it. Well, that's unsecured lines of credit.
Mm-hmm.
And those are unsecured creditors. They're not going to have much collateral, are they? I mean, it's hard to take back clothing.
Right.
Or electronic gear at Best Buy or whatever the case might be. A secured transaction, on the other hand, is one where the lender takes back collateral. Many times, you know, a car, a boat, a trailer, of course land, obviously land, as which becomes the mortgage.
Right.
That is a word that's so prevalent. But if you think about it, it's really a secured transaction.
Right.
And so yes, Ben, there are secured transactions and there are unsecured. If there is security, then the lender is able to seize the collateral as to collect the debt, the unpaid debt, but the note, the promissory note, is still in effect. And if the collateral does not completely pay off the promissory note, then contractually the debtor is still liable for that difference or that deficiency. On an unsecured debt, you just have the note. You just have the promise to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And there really is no collateral. These classifications then follow the law in other contexts, such as in the estate context. Secured creditors have a priority over unsecured creditors.
Right.
In when we go to settle an estate, they're going to have a priority over matters in bankruptcy courts and in our bankruptcy, under our bankruptcy
right.
laws.
They're in line first.
They're in line.
Yeah.
Okay. They have a secured, lien and they're going to be treated different. They're going to have a bit of a priority. And of course, who is at the very top of the list?
The IRS.
There are two folks at the top of the list, I might add.
Yeah.
One is the IRS, absolutely. And let's don't forget also the North Carolina Department of Revenue or the other state taxing institution or authority.
The tax man's at the
top. The tax man is at the top.
Yeah.
The other person that many times is at the top or the entity that's at the top are the expenses of administering this situation. That's true in bankruptcy. That's true in debtor-creditor law. That's true in estate law. Our public policy concerns, if you will, Ben, understand that we need these matters settled.
Right, right.
There's a public policy need and argument that it's best that if someone is in default on a car or a boat or a piece of property or even an unsecured credit card, that there be settlement of this, that there be administrative work done to resolve this issue. And so therefore, you know, the expenses of resolving this, sometimes the, of course, attorney cost.
Right.
Or any kind of accounting cost and getting those tax returns filed. Or any kind of appraisal work in order to get this asset properly appraised.
And filing fees, all the kind
filing fees. Yeah. These are administrative cost. Mm-hmm. And they also have a sense of priority in many, many statutes.
There's a parallel. I mean, a defendant is due a vigorous defense. Mm-hmm. You know, an estate needs to have vigorous representation. So it's mm-hmm. it's good public policy in any case.
That's correct. Right. That's correct.
All right. We're taking your questions. If you have questions about debtor-creditor law, we're talking about foreclosures, but also other debtor-creditor matters, 800-818-2255, 247-7282-353-4674. As we continue here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, and on the website, as an email was sent last week after the program, harvellandcollins.com. That's harvellandcollins.com. And more coming up in just a moment with Cecil Harvell. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal here with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station, online at harvellandcollins.com, and in the studio with Cecil Harvell.
Absolutely. Ben, again, I think what is important to impart to our listeners is just that this whole body of law is a matter of negotiation with the creditor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of you know, it begins with, you know, a credit check, a credit report on behalf of the debtor, and the creditor making extending credit with an understanding that the transaction would either be unsecured or the transaction is secured with a car, with a boat, with a piece of property.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, all of this is negotiation. This is basic contract agreements between the debtor and the creditor. And then, of course, there is an instrument. There's a security instrument,
right,
that puts that collateralizes that loan,
mm-hmm,
with the car or with the boat or with the property, the real property.
Mm-hmm.
And in that fine boilerplate print that one signs at the car dealership,
mm-hmm,
or maybe you go directly to the bank to your bank loan for your bank loan on your car or your boat, trust me, there's a security instrument in,
yeah,
there. There's a grant whereby you say, I promise to pay, but if for some reason I am late or I am unable to pay or I'm in default, then you have the right to collect your debt against the property. You have the right to seize the car or seize the boat,
mm-hmm,
or foreclose on the property.
Mm.
And all of this is negotiable on the front end.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's negotiable at the time that one clients begin to have problems making those payments.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the principle behind that is whether it's a bank doesn't want to really own and sell real estate and or they want to have a boatyard.
Right.
So they really want to hear from you if you're having some difficulties.
They
do.
Your
lenders do.
You know, and of course there are creditor rights that are very significant in these areas of the law. And that's why with regard to foreclosure, which was the essence of the beginning of this conversation, was that, you know, it is highly statutory. There are very precise deadlines and very precise procedures that must be followed. And and this is really to protect the creditor.
Mm-hmm.
This is to protect the person who, excuse me, the debtor. The debtor, There are many, you know, that's all of those rules and regulations are there so that the debtor has protection and there cannot be, you know, abuse of process, and
mm-hmm,
that one can't just take away the property without going through the appropriate measures and the appropriate kind of notice. Public notice, you know, we see in the newspaper the publications,
sure,
of,
yeah,
foreclosures. Again, these are there to protect the debtor many, many times.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, since the question was spurred on by about automobiles or boats, et cetera, in order to hold off the person coming and repossessing a vehicle like, mm-hmm, that, you should know that you're already in trouble, right? I mean, you should be getting notices.
Of course, the debtor would have received letters. Of course, this day and time, phone calls, collection agencies. And, you know, if and when these things start happening to, you know, our listeners or to any of our clients, you know, it really is time to seek some legal advice,
mm-hmm.
and see what can be done before the whole house of cards begins to fall. Let's see what, if anything, can be reconciled. Because again, you're absolutely right, Ben. The bank, the lender, the car lender, the boat lender, the real property lender, they don't want to take back the collateral.
Mm-hmm.
They have a strong procedure in place to be able to do it, and they will, in fact, do it. But it's costly to them. And if there's some way they can resolve the conflict, resolve the default through negotiation, they many times are willing to do so.
Okay. Our number here, once again, is 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674, if you'd like to call and ask a question on that. As we were mentioned, though, that it's with a secured loan, because many people, though, will pay cash for a car, or they'll buy a car based on another kind of loan. If it's a home equity loan, is that still a secured loan for that? Or?
Well, the home equity loan would have as its collateral the home. And so, you know, the car, if you
buy a car with a home equity loan,
it's not going to be a loan against the car.
Right.
Ben, we've talked about before in our program, but here at the radio station, but you always remind us that we, can never be too repetitive. You know, this is so important in the estate context.
Mm-hmm.
So many spouses particularly think that they are personally liable for the debts of their spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So many files in our office right now where the husband, for whatever reason, had a car loan,
mm-hmm.
or the husband has several credit card obligations. He's died. The wife is the executor. She is also the beneficiary of the estate. She is not going to have to use her funds,
mm-hmm.
or even life insurance proceeds or accounts with right of survivorship or IRAs with beneficiary designations. These things are passing to her outside the scope of the probate estate. And many times we are able to receive a very favorable result with the creditor,
mm-hmm.
because of the fact that these are non-probate assets.
Right.
Now, of course, if the husband has a $100,000 CD in his name also, and that's right there,
mm-hmm.
in the estate, then obviously the credit card companies and the car loan company are going to want to get paid. But if the assets are outside the scope of the estate, we're able to use that for the benefit of the spouse. It's not as if, I want to be clear here, it's not as if there is not law,
mm-hmm.
in the state of North Carolina that allows the creditor under certain circumstances to go against these non-probate assets. But that's particularly cumbersome,
mm-hmm.
for the creditor. Let's face it.
Right.
I mean, how long are those assets even going to be there? In other words, how are they going to collect the judgment, because it's not so easily collectible,
sure.
when it's life insurance proceeds or IRA or something that passed outside the scope of the estate. On the other side of the coin, though, Ben, when it's in the estate and,
mm-hmm.
it's sitting right there, and it's on inventories with the clerk of court, then we can't close the estate if a claim is made against those funds.
Mm-hmm.
And so the client in that context has less flexibility. But the point here is that if you have lost a loved one, brother, sister, wife, husband, do not just assume that you are going to need to be personally responsible for the debts just because,
right.
you are the executor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and many executors make that mistake right off the bat. They start paying the bills.
They do.
You say, wait.
They do.
But again, we're talking about debtor-creditor issues. If you have questions, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674 as we continue on here with Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And as always, you can go on their website too at harvellandcollins.com, and you can call call for that appointment at 252-726-9050. More to come in a moment. Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal. As Cecil Harvell is in the studio with us, as we've been talking about debtor and creditor law.
Ben, our last few minutes here together, I want to correct something that I said earlier and just make it a little bit clearer. There are just a host of laws that protect the debtor.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of our listeners already know that. They're
yes.
somewhat frustrated by that. Your business owners.
Right.
They come in and they many times say, my word, you know, all the laws are stacked
mm-hmm.
for the person, you know, who's in debt. I got a call from our friend here at the radio, Lockwood Phillips, mm-hmm. just this past week, where the North Carolina legislature is seeking to amend the public notice requirements
right.
for folks who are, who have their goods stored in various, off-site storage facilities.
Mm-hmm.
The case has always been, the law is currently that the storage facility, before it can put those goods on the street for non-payment, has to present a public notice that they're about to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a debtor protection
that's
law.
That's right, right.
That's a law in favor of the debtor.
Many times the notices will name who they are, and they'll have X amount of time to settle.
So them. There's a host of laws out there that protect the debtor.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a debtor,
mm-hmm.
then seek some legal advice, because probably one of those laws are out there that we can kind of hang our hat on.
Mm-hmm. You know, those are, again, interesting things because, you know, if we draw so much from English common law, but mm-hmm. they had debtor prisons back
right.
there, and we were avoiding that.
Right. Well, what's happened here with the North Carolina legislature is that it's, of course, right now heavily pro-business,
mm-hmm.
As, you know, a very pro-business legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, they're wanting to lighten the burden on the folks who own these large, storage facilities, off-site storage. You know,
right.
there's some that are quite significant
yeah.
that hold, you know, millions of dollars worth of equipment.
Sure.
And they do not, and if someone is in default, they do not want to have the burdensome requirement of making, you know, of giving the debtor public notice.
Yeah, they've already been trying to get
they've already been trying to reach the debtor, and we don't want to have to give the debtor that public notice. So there's a bill pending in the legislature, and I don't know that I'm citing off all the details right now. I'm
sure.
Probably not. This is just based on a phone call with Lockwood. But the bill, in essence, as Lockwood was explaining it, would eliminate this public notice requirement,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, again, is a burden to the creditor.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a balancing act always here between the rights of the debtor, the rights of the creditor. But trust me, the debtor gets the trump card.
Yes.
Almost
yeah.
always.
Right.
It's a lawyer's duty to zealously and competently and as appropriately as we can represent our client. And if we're representing the creditor, then we're going to need to look carefully at what the rights of the debtor are and make sure that we do not violate any of their rights.
Right.
On the other hand, if we're representing the debtor, we're going to make doggone certain that the creditor has followed all of the appropriate rules.
Right. And if you want to find out more about that, if this is something that you're concerned with as well in your own life, you want to contact the folks at Harvell and Collins for their first free consultation at 252-726-9050. Again, that's 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street, Morehead City.